Hey everybody, and welcome back to ET After Dark. This is Jesse, joined by Chrissy, and today we have a very special guest, Drew Savicki. Welcome, Drew.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's Chrissy. Great to have you here. We were gonna have you on at some point, but you know, I guess that time came sooner than later. So really, thank you for being here.
Sure.
What topic you have in mind for today?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I thought Vermont would be an interesting place to discuss, as it's one of my favorite states in the country.
Yeah.
That's all right. Let's do it. I don't know anything about Vermont besides like Bernie Sanders. That's it.
So why I find Vermont so interesting is that it's on paper, you wouldn't think Vermont would be such a heavily Democratic state. After all, it's extremely rural and extremely white. But then you look at things like its education level, and Vermont is one of the most educated states in the nation. Voters there are also very low in terms of religiosity. That's another key factor that keeps Vermont so heavily Democratic these days, is that unlike other rural areas in the country, those voters are really religious. That's one of the big dividers in today's political world, is religion. One of the more interesting things about Vermont is obviously is that Patrick Leahy, the state's senior senator, is still the only Democrat elected to the Senate from Vermont. Bernie Sanders, as we all know, is technically an independent. Leahy was first elected in a time when there weren't many Democrats elected statewide in Vermont. You know, he was first elected in 1974. A lot has changed in those years. The state had strongly backed Richard Nixon 2 years earlier. So yeah, it's an interesting place.
Have either of you actually been to Vermont?
No, I have not. There are only two states in New England I've not visited. Those are Vermont and Maine. Those are two that I would love to get around to visiting someday.
I've never been. I think the closest I've been is like Delaware, maybe.
I know that following you on Twitter, you're fascinated by a number of states around the country. But what draws you to Vermont in particular?
I find it so interesting that it's sort of a hippie-like place, I guess is the best description to describe Vermont. It's very rural, it has a strong gun culture, but it's also such a very liberal place, and that's what's always fascinated me about it. You know, it was so strongly Republican for so many years, and then as the Republican Party became the party of social conservatives, Vermont voters felt they were no longer welcome in the Republican Party, and so they became Democrats. And it fascinates me to see that ticket splitting is alive and well in Vermont, as the state's popular governor, Phil Scott, is a Republican. He was in the legislature as a Republican. He was elected lieutenant governor as a Republican. And now he's in his third term as governor and boasts some of the highest approval ratings in the country. Vermont voters show willingness to split their ticket. That's quite uncommon in other similarly lopsided states in terms of their partisanship. You know, I mean, we don't see red states like West Virginia electing a Democratic governor anymore, yet Vermont keeps electing Republicans to the governorship.
Absolutely. And as someone who lives in Massachusetts, I think you can see the same phenomenon with Charlie Baker. But of course, getting a Republican into federal office is still a heavy lift. This week, Joe Biden said that he was considering Bernie Sanders for a cabinet position, but they decided they wouldn't risk the Senate majority. Do you think a Republican like Phil Scott would be competitive in a Senate election?
I think if he dropped the party label and ran as an independent like Sanders and pledged to caucus with Democrats, yeah, I think he'd have a real shot. But if he ran as a Republican or pledged to caucus with Republicans, I don't think there'd be much audience for that these days. No matter how much people personally like Scott, the idea that he'd caucus with Mitch McConnell, that's not going to fly in such a state. Yeah, Vermont's federal politics are very different from the state-level politics. But part of Bernie's appeal way back in 1990 when he first ran for the House is that he's a very strong retail campaigner. And Vermont is a state where retail campaigning is still very much a thing. It's always been part of the state's political culture. It's such a small state that you can go out and greet voters. Pre-COVID, Patrick Leahy, you know, is a lot like Chuck Schumer in New York. He shows up at every local parade and stuff like that. You get to see your politicians.
Yeah, a while back, I think I watched a documentary about Leahy campaigning in 1974 and the amount of touring of the state he did, especially in such a rural state, how many places you have to go is pretty incredible.
One of my favorite things about Northeastern politics is the Amish. And all of Vermont is rural, but the Northeastern part of the state is even more rural. And it has attracted a decent Amish population in recent years. They have been attracted to far Northeastern Vermont as they have more space to grow their communities out there than they do in their increasingly crowded communities in Pennsylvania. But the Amish are sort of an odd fit for Vermont's politics, given the Amish are so socially conservative. I don't think they really would care for the politics of Vermont very much.
Yeah. Chrissy, you have anything to add?
Yeah. No, it's just really interesting to hear y'all talk about campaigning in a state like Vermont, because obviously, like, in Texas, we have like a billion counties. And so, you know, what Beto did in 2018 was like, he went to all the counties in Texas, and that was like extraordinary. And everybody's like still trying, like everybody that runs statewide in Texas is like trying to live up to that. But I'm just thinking of like the comparison of running statewide in Vermont versus Texas, because I am honestly kind of jealous.
Yeah, retail politics is uncommon in these larger states. Yeah, yes. Although Iowa is decently large, Chuck Grassley makes it a point to do his 99 county tour every single year. He makes it out there, even in his old age. He visits all of Iowa's 99 counties. It's mostly politicians of that era, Grassley and Leahy, who are used to getting out there and greeting voters. It's not something you really see in modern candidates these days.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And that's actually one of my like favorite campaigning methods. I do like to see politicians out there talking to the communities that they wish to represent. I think that it's really, really important.
Yeah, I think voters like that. I think voters like seeing their politicians up and close. People like seeing their congressman or their senator. It's important. You know, they like being able to go up to their senator and ask them questions. It's, you know, why Chuck Schumer has been so popular over the years in New York is that he shows up to practically every high school or college graduation in the entire state. He is, even as he's become the Democratic leader, he still maintains that huge presence across the state. There are a lot of that, those politicians of that era who love doing that. And it's something we need more of. A lot of younger politicians have a lot to learn from that, to go out there and just show up at random events and keep, you know, it doesn't hurt. You know, even if you win just two votes is better than zero. You know?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something that we saw a lot in Georgia. Even now during COVID, I think that Democrats really took the criticism that they were getting from not doing in-person events, and they really worked to sort of change that in Georgia. And I think that that's also a reason why we were successful there this past week, which I can't believe that was this past week. Like, yeah, that feels like ages ago.
Definitely.
This is like completely off the point, but you know, looking at Georgia, and I think Democrats really benefited from having an early mail-in vote, because you could target the locations where you saw straggling low turnout and sending Kamala Harris, sending Joe Biden, sending Ossoff and Warnock, I think that really helped them win.
Oh yeah, I think if we had, I think if every state shifted to that style of voting, it would really radically change campaigns. It would, you'd have a much better idea. Oh, well, I need to get X voters in this area out. I know where all the votes are coming from. It would help candidates tremendously figure out where they need to turn out more votes, rather than just hoping everybody on election day, hope that you've done it all. Having to do it over 3 weeks makes the process a bit easier on candidates. More time to really target specific areas.
Yeah, and that's the reason why we were able to get such like early calls on election day. I think, you know, forecasters were really like, oh, well, you know, the Republicans didn't do as great as they were supposed to on election day in this precinct. So like, it's pretty much over for them, which I know that a lot of people were expecting to not get a call until like, I don't know, they were saying weeks even, and it turned out to be like the same night. And by the morning we had our results. So that was really nice.
I think those people are pessimists. Very, very rarely are races determined in weeks.
I think you're right. That's something that I heard a lot for the general too. They were like, this isn't going to be determined for like a very long time. And it was like very clear that it was in Biden's favor after like maybe like 2 days. So yeah, it was a very pessimistic thought. And I was like, don't lump Georgia into that. I want to get this over with.
True. If my memory is right, aren't you, don't you also have pretty strong interest in Rhode Island politics, or is it Connecticut?
Yes, I particularly love Rhode Island. A lot of my family is from there. My dad grew up there in Pawtucket and in Central Falls as well. Those are two very blue collar areas with a large Hispanic population these days. Rhode Island is particularly interesting due to its like the Midwest, it has a history as an industrial hub. Rhode Island was throughout much of the 20th century a big industrial center in the United States. And when my family came over here in 1920, they worked in the textile mills in Central Falls, Rhode Island. That was the big industry in these places. And you can still see the legacy of Rhode Island's very blue-collar, industry-heavy economy today in its politics. You see places like Cranston and Central Falls really shifting right in recent years. Yeah, it's a really fascinating state. Central Falls in particular is interesting since it's the most Hispanic city in Rhode Island. Like other areas with huge Hispanic populations, it shifted right quite a bit from Clinton to Biden. It's an area that should worry Democrats. They really need to keep that vote steady, as it could have, you know, it could have implications down the line. But on the flip side, you saw the same general shift. You saw the wealthy areas shift enormously leftward. Places like Barrington and East Greenwich, which are very home to a lot of wealthy whiter voters. Rhode Island's a really neat place. I always enjoy visiting it. I've been all over the state. It's up there as one of my favorite states, if not my favorite, the Ocean State. It's really such a fascinating, quirky little place that doesn't get enough love, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, definitely. The governor of Rhode Island this week was selected to be Joe Biden's Secretary of Commerce, and of course they'll have a new governor going into the 2022 election. So what kind of ramifications do you see her nomination having on the state?
So pre-COVID, Gina Raimondo was not an especially beloved governor. She's rankled a lot of people in the state, but her handling of COVID has done wonders for her image. Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee will become governor of Rhode Island pending her confirmation. Raimondo and McKee are not on speaking terms. They don't particularly care for one another. McKee has some ethics issues, and he's just broadly unpopular with many parts of the party. But I would still expect a crowded field of candidates for governor in 2022, especially given that several statewide office holders are term limited. State Treasurer Seth Magaziner is term limited. Secretary of State Nelly Gorbea is term limited. Congressman Jim Langevin's district is going to disappear because Rhode Island is losing a district. So pretty much everyone is out of a job, so they're all going to seek the top spot. Maybe one of them will drop down to the lieutenant governor's race, since that will be open, thanks to McKee's assumption to the governorship. Though I don't think he'll really have much of an advantage in a primary. People don't really like him a whole lot. He definitely hails from the moderate wing of the state party, and he's definitely on the very moderate side of the moderate wing. So he'll definitely face a strong challenge. I would think Secretary of State Gorbea is probably the favorite in the primary, just given her popularity in the state. She outperforms the rest of the ticket, and she is a Hispanic woman. A big chunk of the Democratic primary vote in Rhode Island is no longer blue-collar white people from the western part of the state. It's Hispanic voters and Providence and Pawtucket and Central Falls. And I think that's probably why Langevin would also struggle. Being the congressman from Southern and Western Rhode Island, it's not that useful in a Democratic primary anymore, because a lot of those voters aren't voting in Democratic primaries these days. And that's why Langevin faced such a close primary last year. A lot of his core voters are now Republicans.
Going back to what you said about Rhode Island losing a district, do you think Langevin would try to take on Cicilline, or do you think Cicilline is just going to win it?
Unlikely. Yeah, I don't think so. I think Cicilline has a clear path to holding that seat fairly easily. He's much more in tune with the state's electorate. And he's from Providence. That's a very big advantage in a statewide primary. Langevin is just probably just too moderate, really, these days for a statewide primary. A lot's changed since he was first elected to Congress 20 years ago. It's been a long time.
Yeah, as a casual observer of Rhode Island politics, as from a neighboring state, something that interested me was, you know, the progressives winning primaries for state legislative races a few months ago. And, you know, we didn't see the same here in Massachusetts, and progressives are looking for the same, hopefully, in 2022. It was just interesting to see Rhode Island take the lead on that front.
Yeah, Rhode Island traditionally has a very machine-oriented state Democratic Party. A lot of these incumbents are very out of step with their districts. And a lot of them, some had issues with corruption and stuff, and that partly is why Speaker Mattiello lost re-election. Is he's long rumored to have ties with organized crime and other things. Essentially, he's like the Rhode Island Mike Madigan. He's had a lot of issues over the years, and his defeat by Cranston Mayor Alan Fung's wife is really a big shakeup for the legislature. It's gonna be much more liberal this session, much more in tune with what voters of Rhode Island are like. As Mattiello has been endorsed by National Right to Life, he was backed by the NRA. Those aren't really stances held by most Rhode Island voters these days. He didn't really make any sense as Speaker of the State House, especially as a Democrat.
Well, I was going to change the subject, so if you have something to say about Rhode Island, go ahead and get it in. All right. Well, I know that a lot of people probably really want to hear your takes on North Carolina 2022 Senate race. And I want to hear your takes. So what do you think about like all the declared candidates and slash potential candidates in the Democratic primary?
Yeah, really the one I'm most interested in, I don't think he's ever really considered a bid for office, but Reverend William Barber has been a familiar face in North Carolina politics for the past decade. He was a very outspoken opponent of Pat McCrory's tenure as governor. And, you know, as we saw with Raphael Warnock's win, running a Black preacher isn't necessarily a bad idea, especially given Democrats' slippage in the northeastern part of the state. Running a Black candidate is pretty much a must-have. Generally, North Carolina Democrats run a generic white guy for office here. You know, we've had people like John Edwards, all sorts of just generic white guys with no real discernible profile. One of the most speculated candidates is Charlotte area State Senator Jeff Jackson, who's just basically a generic veteran from a suburban district. He really doesn't stand out that much, and I really don't think Democrats need to keep running the same basic kind of candidate over and over again here. I think it'd be worthwhile just to try something new. We've been running generic white guys for the past decade, so it seems worthwhile to go for a change. On the Republican you're going to see probably a lot of Republicans run. The biggest question mark is Laura Trump. She's originally from Wilmington, so I don't know if she'll run, but I think she'd probably have the Trump endorsement if she did run. And that would hurt the only declared candidate, Congressman Mark Walker, who used to represent a really gerrymandered district outside of Greensboro. He's a pastor himself. So if it is Walker versus Barber, that would be a very interesting race to see an evangelical white pastor versus a Black Baptist pastor. I don't think we've ever seen a Senate race like that before, and it would be very interesting. I know a lot of people want Governor Roy Cooper to run, but it was Democrats, again, losing the lieutenant governor's race. That's not really an option. Our new lieutenant governor here, Mark Robinson, is quite a character. He's made a lot of strange remarks over the years, a lot of homophobic, anti-Semitic remarks, and I don't think anybody really wants that guy becoming governor. Especially with Republicans still in control of the legislature. Cooper would be a strong candidate, but no, I think that door is pretty clearly closed at this point.
I think one of the more interesting candidates on the Democratic side is Justice Earls, and just the idea of running a jurist for Senate is just interesting to me. What do you think about her prospects as a candidate?
Yeah, there's no real downside to choosing her, since she was elected to a six-year term as a Supreme Court justice in 2018. So her seat would be up in 2024, regardless of whether she runs. She's been elected statewide, so she has experience there, and she was crucially elected statewide in a midterm year. So she has experience with that. She would be an interesting candidate. Roy Cooper would be allowed to pick her successor on the court, as she would have to step down if she decided to seek office, as you can't stay on the bench and run for office at the same time in this state, except if you're running for election as a justice, then you can stay in your position.
Yeah, and then she was the one that lost the chief justice seat by a few hundred votes, right?
That was Chief Justice Sherry Beasley lost re-election. Associate Justice Paul Newby. Yeah, that was a disappointing loss for sure. Democrats really got wiped out in the judicial races here. Republicans took the majority on the Court of Appeals and reduced Democrats' majority on the Supreme Court by 2. So it was a pretty brutal year for North Carolina Democrats. not a whole lot of bright spots, really, up and down the palette. There was very little good for the party.
You have anything, Chrissy?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like, back to your point of running a Black pastor, I think that I'm actually not sure about, North Carolina demographics so much, but I know that a lot of friends that I have that are Black activists, they were actually very upset with the DSCC this year because, they were uplifting Cal Cunningham as opposed to Erica Smith, and they thought, mm-hmm. They're very disappointed in that, and they're even more disappointed whenever the polling was so off and we ended up losing that seat, that race.
Yeah, Smith is definitely not very popular in the state Democratic Party. She has a history of endorsing Republicans here against several of her colleagues in the state Senate. She's not going to get any party support, that's for sure. Endorsing Republicans is a no-go for the party. You're just not going to get anywhere doing that. Yeah, she's, I doubt it. She endorsed Jackson's opponent and another Dem senator's opponent as well. Yeah, she endorsed two Republicans last cycle. Yeah, so that's a big no-no, especially given that Democrats wanted to win back control of the legislature. Having Smith going around endorsing two Republican candidates did not endear her to the party in any way.
I know that you, Drew, you did some, you spoke in like, in front of like a high school class or something the mm-hmm. other week, right? You did, how was that? I wanted to hear about that.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah. Somebody on Twitter who follows me works for this private school in Ohio and said this class on elections, this high school class would like to hear from me. I said, yeah, and it was a lot of fun. Students asked a lot of great questions. It sounds like a really good course. I think the students have a promising future in politics. It's fun to talk to high schoolers about politics. I had a lot of good questions. I knew more certainly than I did when I was in high school. So I'm very heartened by that. I have plenty of experience dealing with high schoolers, given how young election Twitter is. I have no shortage of experience there.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes I feel like I'm like people's like big sisters because I'm just like, everybody's so young and I'm like, dang, I'm only 20, but I feel kind of old.
Yeah.
Some of these young people scare me.
Well, I can say the same about you.
This has been really, really interesting. We talked about like how many states today? Three? Four?
Yeah, four, I think, yeah.
This has been a very great conversation on short notice. Thanks for joining us, Drew.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Of course. Next time we'll have a different guest with another topic. I don't know if I want to say that
because we don't know who it's gonna be.
Well, I know
we'll plan it like the night before and then hopefully it pans out.
we think we know who it is and we'll announce it later. But thank you for listening and good night.
Bye.